You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Welcome to TFL Talking Trucks podcast. And on this episode, I have my old buddy, Nathan.
Hello, guys. Greetings from Los Angeles.
Hey, dude. Dude, we haven't spoken in too long. But on this podcast, I want to do a couple things. First of all, we got to hit some truck news because you and I haven't spoken in, what, a month or two.
Yep.
You recently went on an event for F-150 Lobo. And there's a couple of other items, but mainly we're officially in summer. It's summer.
Yeah. Welcome to summer. Now, by the way, just so you know, I know for a fact that you guys in Boulder have been having days that are around 100 degrees.
Yes.
And or even more in the South Bay, Los Angeles, as long as there's no riots with big fires, which are happening, then the coastal breeze. I'm at a cool 79 to 85 degrees.
Mwah. Just always, let me know. You're at that temperature always?
Almost always. Yeah. Why do you think I'm spending so much ridiculous money just to live down here in a shack? Because the weather is amazing.
There you go. But the reason why I brought up summer is because a lot of people are vacationing. They're taking their pickup trucks on the road. They're towing campers, boats, what have you, everything. So I wanted to talk about the most efficient and the least efficient pickup truck you can buy based on our own testing. So this is not going to be EPA. We're not going to be reading, sticker, window stickers or anything like that. This is based on TFL trucks testing. We do quite a lot of towing tests as well as just empty trucks, just basically brand new pickup trucks on our Denver 100 loop, which is, toll road or all the way around Denver, Colorado. And we've done efficiency testing going back to what, 2013, 2012?
Oh, easily. And you know, one thing that we've learned is that our numbers tend to be very different than the EPA numbers. So a lot of the printed ones on half tons and mid-sized trucks, they don't quite match what we get. And often we do better, but sometimes we do worse than what they predict.
Exactly. And we also have, I was going to say luxury, but maybe just we test some vehicles, the same vehicle in different climates, right? So
that's correct.
Sometimes we, test it in the middle of January and we get a different result from when we test it in the middle of July. And this is the same vehicle, right? So we have some of that experience as well. So I wanted to start with some news. I know both you and I both saw the F-150 Lobo in person, so I just wanted to hear some of your thoughts because there was a Los Angeles event of the F-150 Lobo.
That's right. The event I went to was in Santa Monica, California, and what was cool is that they were trying to bring out a little bit of that local truck culture. So they had a bunch of slammed or lowered F-150s, modern ones. And there's even a club here that does that, and they're all about just specifically the F-150. And this isn't the first time we've seen a street truck version of an F-150, right? There's been a few, actually quite a few over time. And other automakers have done this. I mean, the 454, the SS, whatever. All these trucks have all been street oriented, right? Well, Ford did something very different, I think, with the Lobo F-150. Because, it's got those giant 22-inch wheels, right? They're painted black. They dropped the back about 2 inches. So they got kind of the feel. The front end certainly looks it. But what's unusual is they base it on an STX, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the interior is completely regular and standard four-wheel drive, which was not what I expected. So that was one thing that really took me by surprise.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, in fact, all F-150 Lobos, at least initially, right? Because actually what also surprised me is that they're calling it the 2025 model, right?
Yeah,
Because
right.
it's coming online later this fall, where they're beginning production and sale of this truck from the factory. But it's still a 2025 model, initially. And then I'm assuming it'll become a 2026 as well. So that was already a surprise. And then all of them will be, like you said, crew cab only. So no two-door, which is kind of weird because F-150 Lightning, the original supercharged V8 street truck, was a two-door truck, right?
Right.
So this is not the case here. They're all going to be four-door crew, and also all of them will be four-wheel drive.
Yep. Which is, I mean, a street truck to me is something that has big power going to the rear wheels. Now, fortunately, they are putting in the Coyote in all of them. So there's no EcoBoost or any of that. You got a big honking V8. They said part of the deal was that they wanted that sound and feel, the V8. And we can all acknowledge that the Coyote is a very good V8. It was over 400 horsepower, I believe.
Yeah.
It's a good engine to put in there. However, once again, you're right. I mean, four-wheel drive and having a crew cab, I mean, that's a lot of extra weight and size on a vehicle that you're building for the street. I mean, personally speaking, I think it would have been really cool had they done just a regular cab, just rear drive, and put that Coyote in there. Suddenly, you have a Mustang with a pickup truck bed, basically. That would have been super cool. But you know, Ford has to make these decisions on things that we just don't know about, and return on their investment, design, all these things.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously we can't completely get into their heads because, they have all the data in front of them,
Right.
where certain trucks are sold, et cetera, and what customers really appreciate, what they don't like. So, of course, they're looking at all those pieces of data, and you and I don't have access to some of this. So, but what surprised me a little bit, and I was a little bit bummed, and I wanted to ask you about this, is that
Sure.
the V8 that's in it, the 5 liter, it's just a standard V8 you can get in other F-150s. So they didn't add power to this V8 for the Lobo specifically, which was kind of a bummer because, right, when the Raptor came out, right, in what, 2010, the whole story behind that brand was unique suspension, lift, wide body. So the truck looked different. It was more capable off-road, and it had a little bit of extra power. And that has continued through the generations where they had specific high output versions of their engines for that truck. But for this Lobo brand, it's kind of the standard powertrain that they use in other vehicles, and a slightly lower suspension, like you said.
Yeah, so it may handle a little bit better, although we don't know for sure. We haven't driven it yet. I'm wondering how heavy those wheels are because that could actually affect the drive of the vehicle. And I agree with you 100%. I mean, one of the things you expect on some of these specialty vehicles, right, is especially the street-oriented ones, is getting a little bit more power. And remember, I was talking about how Chevrolet, for instance, had the 454 and the SS later on that they had a much more powerful version of their pickup. The same thing with Ram. Remember, they had that V10 version of their truck. That thing
Yeah.
was a beast. Two
SRTs.
different generations. Yeah, I mean, just a monster.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you know, Ford is trying to probably keep this thing affordable. That's my guess. But at the same time, it would be nice if they perhaps, I don't know, did headers and opened up the exhaust a little bit, opened up the intake a little bit, given a little bit more, or perhaps, yeah, supercharger, twin turbocharger, something. Now, obviously, everything they add will make it more expensive, but at the same time, I think people are hoping that a street truck actually has street cred, hence more power.
Exactly. And a lot of it is about the look too, right?
Right.
I'm actually kind of glad. What I really like about the F-150 Lobo is the front end is a little bit unique, right?
Yep.
The grill, the way that the light goes through the grill,
All the way across.
and then also just the lower bumper area, right? So the front spoiler is quite unique for this particular truck, and that makes it stand out. Like you and I wouldn't be able to in our garage put our LED lamps, in the same way through our grills. So that's kind of unique factory component. But you and I can go out and replace wheels and tires any day of the week, right? I mean, we could do it ourselves.
True. And I know that, you know, it was obviously Ford speak when I asked them specifically about the interior at the event. And one of the guys said, well, it's a clean slate and they can go and do whatever they want to do with it. And people tend to customize their own interiors. And I wanted to cut him off and say, yeah, they tend to customize their own exteriors as well. So what are you saying? But I get it. I get what their point was. But if you guys are expecting anything special, like unique interior touches that the Lobo Maverick has, you're not going to get that on this one. It is essentially an STX on the inside. It doesn't even have a Lobo moniker or anything stitched in the seats, nothing. It's just a regular interior.
Yeah, I'm wondering how popular this will be. But you said they also had customized previous generation trucks at this event.
Well, current ones and previous generation ones, and they were actually quite nice. They were just they basically slam versions of the truck, but they had beefier suspensions. A couple of them you could tell they had some upgrades, supercharger on the Coyote, some really limited difficult things to find, like a short bed and a single cab with the V8, stuff that's just not easy to come by nowadays. So they were able to put that together in some of these trucks. And they actually have a group of people who meet with these trucks here in LA. Big surprise. I mean, there's a million car clubs here in LA. Mm-hmm. And they get together with their lowered Ford F-150s, specifically Ford F-150s.
Do you know our head of video production, Ian?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I think he's working on Kid Number 7. He is the man. He repopulated half of Colorado.
Not quite. He's not that far yet. But Ian was with me in Detroit with the Lobo for the Lobo. And you know what Ian said? And he doesn't appear on camera, by the way. He's strictly our video producer and editor and videographer. So he said they should have slammed this Lobo down. You know, he wanted it on the ground, maybe air suspension, something where, it was just slammed.
I agree that because that's part of the whole culture, right? Slamming the vehicle, getting it down. I totally get that. But the other side of it is, and I'm trying to think a little bit more in a mature fashion, what's the return on investment if Ford goes and does that? What happens if Ford puts airbags on all four corners, right? And to make this thing so it can slam out of the factory? That is a lot of money to make that truck do that. That means research, development, crash testing, and making sure that they pass on their savings and or expenses to the buying public, meaning that truck, which I'm guessing is probably going to be over 60 grand to come in. I'm thinking that's probably roughly where it's going to be.
Yeah,
I'm
thought they said like 59,995, which is with a couple of small options, you could be 60K right there.
Easily, you could be over. But my point is that it would probably be 70 or even 80 grand if you were going to do that type of suspension where you could slam it and have an air suspension air ride. It would be cool, but it will be expensive. And I think that Ford's like, okay, well, we'll sell more doing it this way. Once again, I'm trying to think the way they would corporate. Otherwise, I'd say supercharge that engine, manual transmission, make it so you can slam it wherever you want, rear drive only, get rid of that back cab. Yes. And also, frankly speaking, I want a different design of the wheels. I want something super lightweight aluminum, like that Swiss company that makes them super light. You know, that way less rotational mass when you're spinning and burning your rear rubber. That's what I would want.
Well, there you have it. That's a hot take. That's a hot take right there.
You're welcome.
So thank you. So we also had another piece of news that you and I have not discussed yet. Which is what is happening with Jeep trucks?
Right.
Right.
Well, you guys broke a story. I think you were the first to this in terms of modern, because how many times have we covered this, right?
Jeep Gladiator.
The Jeep Gladiator, they promised 3 or maybe even 4 years ago, they promised a Jeep Gladiator plug-in hybrid. We've been waiting on it and waiting on it. We've been hearing some rumors about it, but nothing solid for years and years and years. Finally, I don't know, it was about a year ago, someone came forward and said, yes, 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 we're actually doing it. And then nothing, crickets once again, right? Then you guys got your hands on a Jeep Gladiator, which looks like a 4xe, and it most definitely looks like it is being plugged in at a level 2 charger.
Exactly. And this was actually, Cole, can you minimize the image and see one of our viewers sent us these images. Oh, yeah, Eric H. So I want to thank Eric once again. Eric was in the mountains of in Colorado, just near, not far away from our offices, and he actually captured these prototypes, high altitude testing, which included a Wrangler Unlimited four-door plug-in hybrid, which is the 4xe, and also what appears to be a Gladiator plug-in hybrid. And I agree with you, this has been too long where we've been waiting for some major update for the Gladiator. I know they changed the interior, right, recently, for 2024 and 2025. But you know, we need new powertrains, new excitement, right? Their sales are going down. So, and also part of the story, I went to another outlet. I believe it was Mopar Insiders. You know how these forums go deep, right? Some of these forums go very deep, these subjects. And actually, they had some information that Stellantis and Jeep is actually updating the plug-in hybrid system to be more capable, so it has more power and it can go further on electricity.
I wouldn't be surprised. They have access to a lot of the battery tech that comes in from Peugeot, who's actually leading in Europe with some of their tech, meaning that they may have more advanced batteries, obviously lithium ion liquid cooled batteries, and they may be able to, increase their charge rate. Maybe they get charged at 100 kilowatts. Who knows? I mean, this that that the point is that they're definitely upping their tech. Now, there are a couple of things to keep in mind. A lot of people have been wondering what the hell's going on. Why is this taking so long? Because people are assuming that all you're going to do is take the same powertrain that's currently in the 4xe Wrangler and just shove it in there because it would fit, right? And I say yes and no to that. Here's the problem. The 4xe Wrangler still has abysmal towing capability, right? Power's good, but there are issues, and there's weight issues and also battery location issues. So let's say they wanted to expand the battery, make it even larger. Where are you going to put it? You can't just simply slam it under the seat anymore. You may have to make space additionally, or use different chem tech and bring in a different type of battery. There's so many little things there. How will this thing tow now that it weighs 300 or 400 pounds more? And it also has a turbo four-cylinder engine. This is provided that they're using the same engine powertrain out of the Wrangler 4xe. They had to test the hell out of it, which is why I kind of gave them a wide berth and I wasn't screaming at them every time I saw them, at every Easter Jeep Safari. Because they really have to go through all of this type of testing to make sure this thing is competitive. And here's the reason why. Toyota and General Motors and Ford, they all have vehicles that are way up there. They've upped their game. Almost every single one of them is capable of building a version of their vehicle that could tow over 7,000 pounds. They all are very capable off-road. I mean, or have a version that is, right? Even the Honda Ridgeline, which can tow 5,000 pounds, rumor has it that when they go to their next level, they may actually be able to tow more as well. Jeep cannot afford to fall behind right now on their 4xe powertrain. So my guess is they're trying to look at the tea leaves and say, okay, in the future, we need a truck that is far more capable and can deliver comparable, if not better, performance, especially with fuel mileage, than these other trucks, and somehow try to keep the pricing acceptable. I mean, how much does it cost to get a Toyota Tacoma TRD Pro right now?
Well,
80?
that's a ton of money. No, they started like 65, and you
Yeah, but
can.
come on. I mean, they're, I've seen them going for like way more than that.
Well, I don't know about. I mean, with a few options, you could push it up a couple more grand. I don't know if there is dealer markups, but I mean, and you know what? I don't think we need or want another $80,000 midsize truck.
Right.
I'm hoping Jeep doesn't go there. I mean, they might have a Rubicon, special edition, that's fine. But I think what we really need is more choices. And
Yep.
as we're in summer, so if we want to save fuel, I have a whole list here on efficiency. I think, they just need more choices. They've had a one V6 engine basically, which is the
They
Pentastar.
had the diesel, but it didn't last very long.
Right. They had the diesel for a while, which was actually a good option, you know, for people who drive a lot or need to tow a small trailer. I mean, that was an excellent choice. That went away. So right now they still have the V6, 3.6 liter.
I'm
So,
driving right now, it, like parked just out of my house. I have a brand new Mojave.
okay.
Or how does Roman say it? Mojave or Mojave? I think
It's
he says Mojave.
it's a desert as far as I know. Yeah.
The point is that I've got this thing and it's great. I mean, the suspension setup is great actually in traffic. It's not bad, but it has that old V6 and it's okay, but it's not great. And right now it is the least, I believe it's like one of the least powerful powertrains amongst many of the competitors that it's going up against nowadays.
And I think also what they shouldn't do is remove the V6 and only have a plug-in, right? Because certain people may not want to be, you know, paying a little bit extra for the plug-in and or don't need it, right? So, or don't want it. Because a plug-in hybrid does add complexity, right? It does add a certain, you know, a number of components there. So, but gosh, I'm really hoping, you know what may have delayed this as well? Other than their leadership changes, you know, it's Stellantis, et cetera, is that they were waiting for the new tech. I'm wondering if this new tech became available, you know, for mass production. And that may be the key, to this.
That's kind of where my head is too. I think I'm on the same page you are because I think otherwise, when they announced it over 3 years ago, or 4 years ago, I think, I think that they initially thought about just jumping in and essentially just tearing out the powertrain for one vehicle and putting it in another, which by the way, they've done. They did it with the Grand Cherokee. But I think that in this case, they looked at it closer and they thought, okay, we have this other powertrain that'll be acceptable or usable in the next few years. Let's stretch it out, test, make sure that this is going to work, and then we'll provide a vehicle. And I hope that they'll be able to be price competitive. This is one of the biggest issues because let's face it, across the board, if you want a half decent version of any midsize pickup, they tend to be overpriced, far beyond the reach of people who are in the middle class levels, right? And hopefully Jeep got the note because their sales are definitely dropped. And like, oh, okay, maybe we shouldn't sell them for ridiculous amounts of money. Maybe we should find a way to lower them and still give people an off-road capable vehicle that can tow. That's where I think they hopefully should go.
And the fact that their sales are shrinking for the Jeep brand in general, including the Gladiator, they could be first with a plug-in. You know,
Yep. And they would be first.
Toyota doesn't have anything for this. And, you know, they have a hybrid, not a plug-in. GM definitely doesn't have it. Ford has it in other markets. They introduced the plug-in Ranger in Australia, but not here, at least anytime soon. Ram doesn't have a midsize truck. You know, and Nissan, you know, same thing for Nissan. I mean, Nissan is maybe working something with the Frontier, but we don't know anything yet. So this could be interesting.
The future is, buckle up, boys and girls, because I think there's going to be some cool stuff. And I have a feeling that if Jeep finally hits with a plug-in hybrid pickup truck, you're going to see a lot of other ones falling right behind. And my prediction is Ford will be number two, that they'll be the second one following Jeep. That's a logical prediction based on the fact that they already have a production version overseas.
Yeah, and also Ford is super competitive on trucks. I mean, they don't let up no matter what. So let's switch gears. Let's take a look at the Denver 100 loop and also some of the other testing we've done over the last, what, 12 or 13 years. So here on my list, I have basically everything. I don't have a Nissan Titan because it's currently not for sale anymore.
Yeah,
So
I'd say it's, we should leave it off the list.
But you know what? We could start with the Toyota Tundra. How about that?
Okay.
Because recently, Roman and I, we did a loop where we're basically it's 111 miles around Denver, mostly highway. And I know a lot of viewers and listeners probably want also city loops. And we've done a certain number of those too, but it's hard to productionalize those loops because they depend on traffic, they depend on many different elements. So we kind of like doing a highway loop. And I think, Cole, we have a video. Yeah, this one, number 17, where we tested a V8 Tundra, which is the one I purchased, versus a new twin turbo V6 Tundra. And we found some interesting results. Well, first of all, we knew that the V6 is going to be more efficient, right?
Right.
We just didn't know by how much. But here's what surprised me, dude. I have a 2019 TRD Pro. A lot of viewers and listeners may already know this. It's got a, slightly taller suspension. And this was in factory spec, other than my ridiculous snorkel, right? So I was very pleased. I got 18.9 mpg on the highway, almost nine. Yes.
That's pretty close to what the manufacturer's stats are on a stock truck. Am I correct?
Like not lifted one. So
Yeah.
I was, it must have been my snorkel doing an amazing job of, providing ultimate efficiency. No, I'm kidding.
Right.
I'm kidding,
Yeah.
of course. But still, the new Tundra had one of those, removable, movable chins where it had
Yeah.
that spoiler that comes out at speed. So it has all the latest tech. I think it's a little bit lighter than the older Tundra. So it had so much going for it, including a little bit more street bias tires, the one we tested. It was a TRD Rally edition, which was not really an off-roady model, right? Just a little bit of a dressed up, kind of a four-wheel drive vehicle. And that got 22.6.
Does this have the more powerful hybrid system or the less powerful one? Because it's weird with the
Yeah, no,
Rally.
this
I don't
one
know.
was not a hybrid. This
Oh,
was.
so this was the regular twin turbocharged V6 non-hybrid.
Yeah, exactly. So
Okay.
the V6 non-hybrid Tundra got 22.6, and my old truck got 18.9. So I think for both of them, those were reasonably good numbers,
It's
considering
yeah.
everything else considered.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree 100%. I'm actually kind of shocked, to be honest with you.
But I wanted to look at this more because we did also a loop, including the new Hurricane engine, right? The new Ram 1500. And initially, it kind of disappointed us because if you remember, the first truck we had was the Rebel, which
Yeah.
was, the off-roady version. And we didn't do so good with the new Hurricane in the Rebel because you and I got 17.2 mpg on our highway loop,
Right.
which was quite poor.
I
But
mean, your Tundra beat it. That's saying a lot right there.
I know, and here's like the two-edged sword of the new turbo truck, right? No matter what the brand is, you get a lot of horsepower and torque, right? But the other side is when you're using all that horsepower and torque, you're burning so much fuel. So, including the bigger tires, different rear axle. But then Case and I went out and tested a non-Rebel 1500 Hurricane. So the same engine basically, but in more street-worthy truck on the same
Yeah.
loop, and we got 23 mpg using that truck.
I mean, I know Case is probably 100 pounds lighter than me, but come on. Right? I mean, frankly, I think he is nearly.
I don't think that was the deciding factor here.
I don't think so either. That's my point. I guess just being slightly lower with better tires, really, that and a little less drag makes a huge difference.
Now that is competitive, right? So,
Yeah.
and that kind of goes almost across the board. So, like we said, Tundra Turbo V6, 22.6, Ram 1500 turbo engine, 23. We tested that EcoBoost F150 basically in the same video with 23.7 mpg. So, all of these trucks kind of settled at kind of a similar number,
Right.
which was pretty good. So I would consider 23 mpg for a full-size pickup with a V6 turbo or a straight six turbo. I would consider that quite good.
I agree 100%. It's surprising what a difference there is.
But none of them can hold a candle to the baby Duramax, or I mean the 3-liter Duramax.
I think that's one of our favorite engines. I think you would agree that in almost everything they put it in, They get great torque and amazing mileage out of, or at least really good range.
Yeah, and actually, Cole, we've tested a couple of different Duramaxes. I think we have another video where Nathan and I tested Denali version, which is if you keep scrolling, basically what we're doing is we're looking at our playlist on YouTube called the Denver 100 MPG Test. And you, if you're listening or if you want to mo know more information about it, it was the MPG Killer video number 22. If you're listening and you want to know more, just look up TFL Truck on YouTube, check out the Denver 100 MPG playlist, or there is also one called Towing Highway MPG playlist. So look at those two, and I will even allow Nathan people to fast forward to the end. I will allow
That's generous of you.
to see the results
You
for
heard
every truck.
it here first, folks. You are permitted, allowed to go to the end.
Okay, so dude, this truck, we had another goal for you and I when we were doing this. We wanted to see if the new all-wheel drive system in these full-size pickups, how much efficiency it robs or may take away from a
Right.
truck. But when we ran this Duramax diesel, this was the new LZ0. So the latest updated one, you and I got 31.8
This
MPG.
is a full-size pickup truck. Not only that, but it's a four-wheel drive truck that has leather interior and tons of goodies. I think it had massage seats. Am I right?
Well, yeah, it was like a Denali Ultimate. I mean,
Right.
this was one of their highest level trims ever.
Meaning that it's their heaviest trim. It had really large wheels, meaning more rotational mass. The fact that a truck like this on the highway, unladen, of course, except for two, a driver and a passenger, is able to get over 30 miles per gallon is nuts. GNUTS, nuts. And yeah, I know how I spelled it.
Yeah.
I agree 100% that it's an amazing truck.
Yeah, and also what you could see here if you're watching this podcast on TFL Talk channel is that when we ran the loop with all-wheel drive selected, right, which you can do anywhere because it doesn't use four-wheel drive until it absolutely needs it, but still some of the clutches are engaged, right? So
Right.
it's not completely free. We
There's
learned,
drag.
yeah, there is some drag, and we learned that it went to about 27 and a half mpg in all-wheel drive mode. So
Right.
you do lose what, just over 10% efficiency, maybe 15% using all-wheel drive. But still, not it's still way
It's still
more.
over 27 miles per gallon.
Yeah, it's
I
still way
mean,
more efficient than
damn.
any other pickup truck we tested here recently.
Yeah, that is some incredible efficiency. Now, imagine if they were able to take powertrain like that and then add an electric motor and a large battery to it, so you could turn it into like a plug-in hybrid. Oh my God, that thing would be getting stupid potential. Well, theoretically, I mean, there's always weight gain and all that stuff, but it would be really cool, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Actually, speaking of hybrids, I wanted to bring this up since you kind of mentioned, hybrid trucks again. Here, we purchased in December, we purchased a Ford Maverick all-wheel drive, which is a
Right.
hybrid, and then it also has all-wheel drive for 2025. Yeah, number six right there. Well, we had some wild results with this one.
Yeah,
First
you had to
of all,
retest it, if I recall.
yeah, we did. We did. So initially, Case and I ran it in January, and the truck was brand new. It had like, I don't know, 300, 400, 500 miles on it. And we were so excited that we jumped into it for this video. And it was a coolish day, pretty cold day. And we got 30 mpg on this highway loop, and we were disappointed. It's supposed to get much more by the EPA. EPA says it was one of those cases where we got less than the EPA, right?
Right.
Not sometimes more that we see, especially with diesels. Ford called me, and they said, you shouldn't be testing a truck when it hasn't been broken in. So we waited several months. It had 4,000 miles, and we did it again. But what happened was it was a lot warmer. So It wasn't the same temperature, unfortunately. So this was now March or April, and I got 41.8 mpg on the highway.
Damn, same
And
loop, right?
same identical loop. And the way this loop goes, there's a few hundred feet of elevation change. It's mostly flat, but start first you're climbing, between 1 mile above sea level to about maybe 6,000 feet above sea level. So you pick up about maybe 700 or 800 feet of elevation over the first 40 miles. And then you come down, and of course you return to the same place. So it was able to use electricity, going down some of these little hills and coasting. So it was able to use quite a lot of electricity just to move itself on the highway. So
Right.
which is impressive.
It well, we knew that it was capable of this. We've been lauding this little truck for a long time because of the potential. And I'm so happy that you guys did test it again. I'm sure Ford is too. It's a shame you weren't able to test it with the same weather conditions, but the reality is that's the tough part of our job. We don't have a controlled environment where we can test all of these vehicles in exactly the same, temperature and the same environment every single day.
And there's something else going on here because I received several emails from owners, people who own Mavericks, including the older non-all-wheel drive hybrids, just front-wheel drive models. And they said
Right.
that they did notice a considerable drop in efficiency in the winter. So there could be several items going on here. But even if you average 30 plus 41.8, let's say you meet in the middle, I don't know,
35-ish.
36, 36 or
Yeah.
something like that. That's still quite impressive because hybrids usually don't like highway speeds, right? Because
Right.
a lot of the time, like my old F-150 hybrid, right? When I drove it on the highway, for example, Denver to Albuquerque, it would get about 22 mpg, which is just standard, right?
Yeah, that's adequate.
It's adequate. It's very similar to an EcoBoost because that V6 engine is almost always working to push
Right.
the big vehicle through the air at 70 or 75 miles an hour. So
Right.
you're not getting any hybrid benefits from that
Yeah,
system.
but the bottom line is even the Ram system, which I think is making a comeback when they bring back the 5.7, which essentially is just a little bit of a helper off the line. Should make a little bit of a difference, but the real point is that you do save some fuel by off the line, red light, green light, having that electric motor power you up just a little tiny bit until you can kick in. It's moving that mass from a dead stop does take a lot of fuel, and this is one way to mitigate some of that loss. As such, when you're on the highway, you're not doing that. You're only relying on your gas engine, your pistons pumping, and you're not using that electric motor at all. And as you just won't be able to see an appreciable gain in mileage.
Exactly. And like my F-150 hybrid was quite good in the city. Like you mentioned, stop and go. Hybrids really love that type of driving because they can recoup some energy on the slowdown and then,
Right.
help you accelerate initially and kind of bring you up. So I remember in my F-150, I saw something like 26 mpg in the city, which is quite impressive for a bigger truck.
Yeah.
And then our producer and editor, Mary, drove our Maverick hybrid, commuted in it, basically. She has a long commute. I think she drove almost 400 miles in a week. So that's a pretty sizable commute. And
Yeah.
she saw 46 mpg.
Damn.
46. She did not verify it at the pump, but nonetheless, if it was close to that, that's still a very impressive commuting based pickup.
I would agree. Look, we've all agreed that the Ford Maverick, it was a dash of genius for them to make it a hybrid right out of the box when it first came out. It's a real shame that they didn't maintain the really inexpensive pricing of it, but it's still fairly inexpensive. And there's a lot of people out there who are discovering it. I mean, their sales are still looking pretty good, right?
It's not like, the Maverick sales fell down. I mean, I think they're more constrained by some of the production. It is built in Mexico, right?
Right.
So it's partially either some sort of factory limitations or maybe some of the
The
tariff
tariff stuff.
and
Yeah.
something else that's happening right now. But I think the demand is still there. It's still a highly popular truck. little pickup, I should say. You know, sometimes people hate when I say truck when I
Yeah,
refer
I try to say
to
pickup
car.
instead of just saying truck because, yeah, God forbid, and people yell.
Yeah,
But
yeah, yeah. We don't want that. So,
we've proven that it's a capable vehicle, right? And for those people who don't need the hardcore off-road capability of, let's say, a Ford Ranger Raptor or, Tremor, then this is a pretty solid or logical option, I think.
Yeah, Cole, let's switch up to heavy duties really quick because we were able to do something quite good, quite impressive, and I'm kind of tooting my own horn here, where we had three trucks with identical trailers, dude. This was, you've done two trucks with identical trailers with us, but
Oh,
I
yeah.
wanted to step it up just a little bit. Yeah, this one, where we had three basically identical trailers. They didn't weigh a heck of a lot, but I think it didn't matter because it's the aerodynamics of it, right? So these
Yeah, the
are,
drag that's created.
yeah, the very large box trailers, which are some of the hardest to tow because it's like dragging a billboard around with you, basically. And we had the new Powerstroke V8 Super Duty. We had the new Cummins 8-speed Ram Heavy Duty. We had the new Duramax in our long-term tester, Silverado Heavy Duty. So all the basically very competitive, comparable trucks. Yeah, the Ford had a lot more options on it, so it was a little bit more fancy and more expensive. But nonetheless, actually, the Ram was also quite expensive. This model was the heavy-duty Rebel edition, which was also the off-roady version. The Ford was the Tremor, and the Chevy was the Trail Boss. So we had three
Right.
diesel off-roady trucks, off-road models. And we had basically identical trailers, same day. Tommy, Case, the rest of the team was helping out. So we were able to do quite an amazing towing heavy duty test on our MPG loop. Do you have any guesses who was the worst?
So this was the Ram. Now, these were heavy duties, right?
Yeah, and the Ram is the new Cummins eight speed.
Okay.
Yeah,
So
so it's a
that's
new
the new
Cummins.
Cummins.
It's a new Cummins, which are now all high output. They're all 430 horsepower. Then the Ford was also the high output Ford. That's a 500 horsepower Powerstroke V8. And then, of course, GM has, well, right now one power option, right? They don't call it high output, it's just a single engine. And that is the 470 horsepower version of the Chevy.
I'm
So,
going to guess that normally GM's good about efficiency, but I think that they may have dropped off. So I'm going to say that GM is on the bottom.
you nailed it. Actually, I was surprised by this as well because our GM Duramax unladen was one of the best heavy duties we recently tested. It got
Right.
20.4 mpg on our loop, 20.4, with a trailer which was almost 5,000 pounds, but a big giant box trailer. 12 mpg. So it was well, not quite half of what an unladen truck does. And
Right.
that's kind of typical, right? When as soon as you hook up to a trailer, especially a large trailer like that, you can almost halve your efficiency, right? It
Right.
goes in half almost right away. The Ram was next up, the new version of the Ram at 12.7 mpg. So, and Case, Case was driving. He owns a Cummins.
That's
So,
right. Yeah, he does. Although
and
it's a little bit
then,
older.
well, yeah, he has a second gen, personally. And dude, the Ford was so impressive. It had the, it was a Tremor Super Duty, 13.9. So
And it's the most powerful, am I correct?
it's the most powerful, and turns out it was the most efficient on our test. 13.9.
Damn.
Four, in fact, almost 14, versus 12 for the General Motors one and 12.7 for the Ram. And this is the same day, basically same conditions. So that's kind of the bottom line. So Duramax is really good on the highway when you're not pulling,
Yeah.
but when you are towing, Ford is still king, at least for now.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've proven several times that Ford really they know how to put together a powertrain, especially diesels. They've been absolutely killing it. I expected a little bit more out of Ram. I was hoping that Ram would actually be able to topple Ford, specifically because that would force Ford to up their game. You know, it's that's always the good thing when you have to force the other company to up their game. But the bottom line is that Ford is just absolutely killing it, and you know, more power to them.
Yeah, and also I agree with you because there's so much excitement about the new Cummins, right? The
Right.
engine is updated. They have a brand new transmission, more gears. You know, it's no longer the six speed; it's now the eight ZF transmission. And you know what? We're getting a Cummins in our fleet in a few days, actually. So I will be doing more testing. Also, I want to do an unladen Cummins run. And this is not going to be a Rebel. This is going to be a standard four-wheel drive Ram heavy duty. So I'm going to put it on the loop and I'm going to see if it beats the Duramax, which is currently, you know, unladen, one of the best unladen trucks that we've tested here. So that's coming up very, very soon. So I promise, to do more Cummins testing.
Now, the big question, Andre, what about the Power Wagon? When are you getting a new one?
It don't care.
That's right. It don't care. When are you getting a new Power Wagon, son?
I don't know. I
I
don't know
don't
what I can let I can ask you, when are you getting a new Power Wagon?
like they're gonna give me one in Los Angeles. Hey, can take it and go. There's a burning car down the street. See if you can go up and over the burning car down the street. Yeah, there you go. What obstacles do I have? I have to drive an hour minimum in any particular direction to find some sort of off-roading, and even that's not so great. For proper Power Wagon off-roading, you have to be in the Rocky Mountains anyway. That's where you do it. You guys know that. I know that. Ram knows that.
So you'd be happy to know that recently, this was a couple months ago, maybe less, one of our viewers brought a modified Power Wagon. You would have loved this thing. It was lifted with Carly suspension. It had 37s, but
Oh, you did a
still,
video on this.
yeah, we did.
Yeah.
It was the white color. It was a white one.
Yeah.
You should have been there, dude, because this truck was properly modified. It wasn't a joke. And it didn't care. I mean, we went over ironclads as if it was a highway. You know, some of these obstacles are pretty jagged and very large rocks. And this Power Wagon, it had a camper on the back too, a small shell on the back, not a full-size truck camper, but a slightly smaller one.
Right.
Oh, you know what Ram needs to do? Here you can see video. If you're watching us, Cole is playing a little bit of a video of this Power Wagon. Ram needs to redesign the Power Wagon properly.
Yes.
Well, it's been around in this current form for what, 12 years, 14 years? I don't even
I
know.
mean, okay, yes, it has. They've updated the external components. And they've changed around the transmission, right? I think it was a six speed and then it went to an eight speed.
Yes.
Unfortunately, they got rid of the, you know, any form of column shifter, and now it's like a dial, unless they brought back some sort of shifter, which I really wish they would. And I think that they've done some updates, just little tiny updates on the electronics and whatnot. But otherwise, pretty much the recipes remain the same.
Well, dude, if you look at least, I mean, as recent as like 7 or 8 years ago, Power Wagon was king of the hill heavy duty off-roader, right?
Absolutely.
There was no Super Duty Tremor. There was no heavy duty ZR2. There was no heavy duty Trail Boss. None of that existed. But now all those other trucks exist. So I'm looking at Ram. I'm saying, oh, and I mean, Tim Kuniskis is back, right? So Tim is in there.
That's kind of where I was hoping this would go because with Tim Kuniskis coming back, he said Hemis are coming back. And the scuttlebutt has it that a lot of these Hemis are going to be redone, so they'll be better. How they could be more, perhaps more efficient, or burn cleaner, or more power, or all three. Now the big question is, what about that big Hemi that they've got going on inside the Power Wagon? Right? Maybe
Yeah.
they're going to update that as well. Maybe finally they'll put a diesel in there. And I know that they have that Rebel diesel heavy duty or whatever.
Sure.
That's not a
Yep.
power wagon. Sorry,
No.
it's not. It's missing a few components. So maybe finally they'll say, oh, okay, well, we're going to put a big fat diesel inside a power wagon and make it into a real animal. Make it weigh more, but whatever. So yes, they need to update it and they need to do it soon, or else Andre's going to get really angry.
I am
And
already
Mr.
worked.
Kaniskis, you better listen to Andre.
I'm already getting worked up. I don't know if you've noticed.
I can see it. I can see it in your face.
I'm starting to sweat out here.
They owned the market. They owned the market for a while. It was their market. They were the only ones who were doing it. And now, I mean, Ford and General Motors are really in the game. And I got to be honest with you, recently, I got a chance to drive the GMC Sierra Heavy Duty AT4X, right? And
That's a beefy truck.
it's a beefy truck. And this one was actually upfitted by AEV and also the Overland Expo. So it's a special version of that truck.
Oh,
And
okay.
I got to play with that for a little while. And so it has a camper in the back and it's just like fully loaded and it has air suspension. That thing was a beast and it was outstanding. It was, even with that big heavy diesel, man, that thing was awesome. I really enjoyed driving it. And I kept telling myself, wow, do I like this better than my precious power wagon? And I'm pretty close to saying yes.
See?
That's the problem. They need to
Yes.
come back and have it and hit it out of the park yet again. So it's incumbent upon Ram to make that happen.
Gosh, I don't know, dude, because there's still, even for 2025, the Ram heavy duties still have the same wheelbase and cab size that they've had for I don't know how many ages.
Yeah.
And actually changing the entire truck would be so expensive, right? Because if they did change the frame, if they stretched it slightly to match some of the competitors, if they gave it an updated cab, that would cost money. All
Yeah.
those elements cost money. But I think, don't know. I mean, I don't know. Well, let us know in the comments below. Would you want a factory updated power wagon on 35s at least 35s? Because Ford uses 35s. Like you mentioned, some of the AEV trucks and ZR2s are on 35s as well. So
Yeah.
they really need to step up.
I agree 100%. And an important note for you guys, one final part on the whole power wagon thing is that Ram has supposedly updated their heavy duty trucks already, but that really is an exterior thing. Am I correct?
Yeah, it's a grill and it's headlamps. I mean, that's almost dead.
Yeah. They really do need to go to that next step and be competitive by building the truck frame up that is new and competitive. Now, because they're lagging right now, they're behind in the competition in many ways. So they need to once again jump into it, push, 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 and make their vehicle competitive, which is great for consumers like us because all those trucks will improve.
Absolutely. And yeah, it could be a little bit more expensive. I understand that. But like I
Yeah.
said, the competition has already came up there. So gotta answer. I want to close out on a couple of items on this podcast. First of all, you and I and the rest of the team, this was what, almost 2 years ago, we did a mid-size comparison where we took five mid-size pickups on the same loop, Denver 100 at the same time. Remember, even Grant, our marketing director, Grant was involved.
Yeah, that was about 2 years ago.
Yeah, and we've had the new Frontier, Tacoma. This was the new generation turbo Tacoma. We had the latest Ranger. We had the latest Gladiator and a new Honda Ridgeline all at
Yeah.
the same time on the same loop, running all of them. Oh, and of course, my Colorado too.
Yep.
Everything. Wait, one, two, three, four, five, six. I forgot how to count.
That's okay.
Sorry.
Sorry, with age, things happen, my friend. That's just how you have to accept it. I
What?
can't do 21 unless my pants are down.
Oh my goodness. Sorry. You know what I was thinking? I was thinking about we did five mid-sizers on the Ike. That was one hell of a day. I remember this because Mr.
Yeah.
Chuck was there. And then you and I upped it one. Because we decided, you know what? Take that and let's test six trucks on the same day at the same time. And that's why, the entire team was there. We were driving them at the same time. I remember I put Grant in my Chevy Colorado Trail Boss. And he complained, remember, because I had no cruise control in my truck.
Yeah, I know. And after your recent requisition of a very similar truck that does have cruise control, I just kept thinking, oh, poor Andre, you're just going to keep getting it and getting it for making that mistake.
Well, I think I will it will be on my tombstone potentially.
Well,
No.
he forgot cruise control.
Yeah.
But Grant, first of all, so you guys know, Grant first is a member of our team. He's just someone that you rarely get a chance to see. And he has to do a lot, with marketing and what have you. He's also, what, 6'3" or four?
Yeah, he's a
He
pretty
is
good person.
tall. So he's all leg. So imagine when you have super long legs being in a rather tight cab, having to regulate speed when everybody else not only has cruise control, but often has like radar assisted cruise control and lane assist and all that other stuff. And he's walking or driving around in something that is as primitive as a vehicle from the 1920s. So, and I'm sorry, Andre, but that's the facts. I mean, cruise
Well,
control, is actually a fairly old invention. So the bottom line here is that yes, he had to work as hard as he could that entire time. It's a long loop that takes what, 2, 3 hours?
it's about 2 hours, yes.
So, and that's not counting gassing up at the end or the topping off at the beginning.
I really like Grant, right? But I gotta say, I gotta hit him a little bit here because he's an athlete, and I really respect that. He is a rower. He's a one of the, I don't know,
He
champion.
runs the Boston Marathon,
He does all kinds of
which is
really
just crazy. I don't know
insanely
why he
athletic.
doesn't use a scooter with a battery.
I don't know. He does a lot of insanely hard athletic things. And he got out of my trail bus after 1 hour and 55 minutes. And he said his leg was cramping because he was pushing the gas pedal. Come on.
He was maintaining the speed, which is why he was cramping. You can't give him crap on that. Come on, that's not even fair. Poor
Okay.
Grant.
All
All
right.
right, let's move on and wrap this up definitely. But there was a point to where you're going with this loop of ours.
There was actually a point I was trying to make, which was as much as people comment and say they hate turbocharged engines and they really hate downsizing and small four-cylinder engines in a mid-sized truck, all of the four-cylinder turbos in our test, we ran six trucks at the same time, did really, really well and better than the V6s. For example, Gladiator was a Mojave, like the one you have, 19.7 on our loop that day, MPG. Frontier V6, you and I both love it. Traditional truck, very, very simple, very nice, 21.8 MPG. But then there was a significant gap. Because from that to the worst of the turbo trucks, which was my Colorado at 24.4 MPG, then there was also the Tacoma 26.3, Ranger 26.0, and Ridgeline 26.4. Although that's not really fair because the Ridgeline is really just like a minivan with a bed, right?
Okay, you can say that. However, let's face it, the Ridgeline is one of the most efficient mid-size pickups
It
out there.
was, yeah, it wasn't a
It
snap.
won, and it's not the first time it won either. We've done this before against, I think we did it against the Ford Ranger 4 years back or something, and it won there too. So if you want that efficiency and you don't need to tow a lot, and it hauls as much as the other ones, by the way, I really like the Ridgeline. It's a very good pickup for people who don't really need a hardcore pickup. So if you subtract that, then you have the really the winner would have been
Well,
the
it would have
Ford
been the Tacoma, really.
or the Tacoma. The
Yeah.
Tacoma would have taken it in terms of vehicles with a frame. Let's just say with a frame and a solid rear axle.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah, and
I think that
the
makes it a
Ranger
little bit
was
easier.
the Ranger and Tacoma were neck and neck. I mean, they're only 0.3 of MPG apart. So
Right.
really, I mean, I think that's kind of a testament. And you could argue, oh, you're high elevation versus sea level, yada yada yada. But bottom line, it was the same day at the same time. It was.
Exactly. We followed ass to tail each one, and it was real world conditions. And that's what I was saying earlier when we started this broadcast, is that we come up with the different numbers because we test, well, frankly, differently. But this is just what you would do if you're going out there and you were to maintain a speed limit and sit solid on that speed limit and going all the way around 100 miles. This is what you would come up with. And that's what we have. So, yes, of course, we could have had some massive warehouse and done loops inside of it where there's absolutely no wind and temperature controlled. Yeah, we don't have the money to afford something like that. So,
No, okay.
sadly, this is how we do it.
And I don't know, other than Jeff Bezos, I don't know who can afford that.
Well, let's ask Roman.
Oh, Roman?
He's already got a small one.
Okay. Yes, he does have a relatively sizable barn.
If we emptied out the barn, I wonder if we could do laps on it. So, maybe that wouldn't work. It's a little too small.
Maybe if we had a couple of slate pickup trucks, maybe little tiny ones.
Well, that's going to come in the future.
Yeah, we could maybe do that. By the way, we didn't discuss any electrics, really kind of for a reason, because we haven't really done a very comprehensive like test like we did with the mid-sizers and the heavy duties.
Right.
I think that's still to come, right? The great thing about all electric trucks is that they recoup energy, right? They're very efficient electric motors that are
Yeah.
very efficient with the energy they already have. But they suck at recharging, right? So,
Yeah.
because of the infrastructure issues or other issues, so we'll be doing more with that in the future. But for now, those are, so I would say if you had to go like 300 miles, let's say, I think an electric truck would work well. But if you had to go 400 miles and you have to recharge in the middle of that trip, now that makes that trip a lot more difficult, really.
Makes it longer, and plus you have to find chargers because the infrastructure is still not quite there. I will say this: I think that that type of testing, Andre, you should definitely do when Ram finally introduces a couple of their electric ones. It sounds like they may only bring out the Ram Charger, right? Which is essentially a plug-in hybrid,
Range extender.
Yeah, range extender, but still, I think that would be worth trying at the very least and measure that against what Chevrolet has. I wouldn't bother with the Hummer because, frankly speaking, that's just a whole different vehicle, and we've done it several times. And then, of course, the Ford Lightning, which I hear rumors that they're going to update its powertrain.
And I think that timeline is still a couple years out for the
Yeah.
Lightning, right? I think the Ram Charger range extended truck, they said now Q1 of 2026. So that's still what, I don't know, 9 months away, maybe or so to speak. So you're right. I think next year, as soon as the Ram Charger arrives, there'll be a lot more Chevy electric Silverados. Of course, maybe in still an older Lightning, who knows? So yeah,
Yep.
we'll be doing more testing with that.
That sounds like a worthwhile test.
All right, dude. Well, thanks for joining me on this episode of TFL Talking Trucks. This is episode 285. And also thanks for providing all of your videos that you sent to us. And you're appearing in multiple channels, what EV now, what
Car
others?
sometimes now talk, as well. Yeah, so if you're curious, guys, I'm still here with TFL. I do a little bit, it's more limited because I'm working with other people as well. But the thing is that a couple videos per month are still going to TFL. I'm still part of the team, and you guys will be seeing more of me in the future, and it's not because I'm gaining weight.
That's good to know. Also, are you planning any trips to Colorado by chance, anytime in the future?
Yeah, there's a couple possibilities. We have been discussing, Roman and I have been discussing possibly coming out there in fall for another one of your misadventure videos where we buy something used and freaky, which I love doing. I also happen to have a child who lives out there who will be graduating college in May. And so I'll have to go out for that. And then before then, I'll probably come out for an event or two as well. So, yeah, guys, I mean, I'll definitely be out there for some stuff. This whole LA thing is part of like a larger thing where I'm still doing TFL videos, and there's some new ones that'll be coming up in the future too. Some really cool things. Try not to think of it about four wheels, maybe think three wheels, and then you're kind of in the right territory.
What?
I
Okay,
can't say anymore.
I can't wait. Dude, I want to see it. And I also promise that I will come out and see you and Motorman
Oh,
and
yeah.
anywhere anybody else who's around in Los Angeles area?
We'll do the La Vida Loca, my friend, because this is the proper place to be. You won't want to leave when we're done with you.
Actually, I felt terrible because I was flying through Los Angeles and I only had like an hour and a half or something of time layover. Couldn't make it out to you guys. I really
We would
apologize.
have totally driven out too. We would have driven out and then kidnapped you and then prevented you from getting your extended flight or making your next gate and brought you over and like had party time. And then you would have called Roman and said, my plane broke. And he would have said, no, it didn't. And you said, yeah. And Nathan saved me. And then we would have put you back on partially sober onto your next flight and you would have gone home. Everything would have been great. But no. So next time you will make time.
There you go. All right, guys. Thanks for joining
Everybody
us.
Everybody take care.
Now you know what truck to buy because it's the most efficient. Now you know. All right. I appreciate it. And we'll see you next time. Thank you very much.
Adios.
Hey, Drew Johnson Scott here. Build a customized renter's policy with American Family Insurance so you can protect your tandem bike on the go. Thief! Oh, he is struggling with that two-seater. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Some exclusions may apply. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.